You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Welcome back. Second hour has arrived and more of your calls. John Adams will be with us as well, talking about the situation with Tennessee football. How about JG in Knoxville, Tennessee? Hello, JG.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Listen, I sit here every day and watch your show, and I listen to these fans year after year complaining about the officials, costing them a game and everything. And I got to thinking it'd be really nice if maybe you'd have a couple of officials on as guests and let them explain exactly what their job is.
Well, it is a good suggestion, and, we've tried it over the years, and I'm afraid – people only see officiating through the prism of their own team. And let's be honest, none of us are objective about our favorite school. So we see the bad plays. We don't see the bad plays against the other guy. And, one of these days someone's going to come to me with this great conspiracy about how everyone's been trying to undo games. But I've never seen any evidence of it. Have you?
No, I haven't. And, I just thought maybe if they could maybe explain exactly what they have to go through before the game and during the game and after the game, maybe some people quit blaming them for their loss.
Well, it's a good idea, and I think I will try to do that one of these days. So let's go to Texas. PA is on the phone, and you are next up. Hey, PA.
Hey, Paul, I don't normally – I call about once every 3 months or so, and I have never called about the referees, never, ever, because I think it's just – in the end, it normally all evens out. But this one character an SEC official, and I think we all know who he is, he's got a whole forum dedicated to him in Tiger droppings, which is LSU's – large forum for the whole SEC. Anyway, this guy, he's the same guy that got in 2009, had his whole crew suspended for 2 weeks. I don't know if you remember that, when Arkansas played Florida. You remember that, Paul?
I sure do.
I mean, I know it's a long time ago, but he...
I know exactly who you're talking about, and I remember covering the story very well.
The end of the game. Now, I know... it wouldn't be a big deal to me, but there's a common thread running through this. This is the same official that called the fumble, a non-fumble that went backwards, was a backwards lateral against Auburn. He said that it was no clear and immediate recovery. Therefore, there was no fumble, there's no such rule as that. Maybe the SEC office made that rule up. And it's the same guy who kicked Arkansas's best defensive player out against LSU Saturday when he clearly did not target the guy coming over the middle. Okay? And it's the same guy who called a fumble.
Well, listen, PA. I don't want to be. Hold on a second. I don't want to be argumentative here, but listen. I mean, we're not going to character assassinate here, and I don't know how I can continue to say the same thing over and over again. But if you have a complaint, tell your coach to call the SEC office. I know exactly who you're talking about, and you're going through a man's career over 10 years and picking out a couple of spots. I think you could do that with everyone, But, you know, why fans seem, I just have never understood it. And I'm going to quit talking about it because every time I ask and say the same thing, we get 10 more conspiracy theorists out there. But thanks for the call anyway. We all know who he is. Everyone knows who this is. Not a secret. This is not, it's not like the SEC doesn't know who their officials are. It's not like all the fans don't know who their officials are and all the websites don't know who the officials are, considering the same thing gets said over and over again. Zachary is up next. Hello, Zachary. Thanks for the call, Zachary. How about Jake up next? Hey, Jake, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, bud?
Very well.
Hey, listen, you had a caller call in asking about why Kirby couldn't get over the hump. Before this, not this season, but last season, one of the ESPN guys came out with an article saying that Georgia had finally reached that point where they were going to overtake Alabama. And this is his primary backbone of his article was that they'd surpassed them on the offensive and defensive lines. But I was asked to do a little commentary on a local radio station. And what the thing that I argue is that it's a belief. Because since Kirby's been there, they've signed more five stars than anybody in the country. There's no doubt he's recruiting. You can question development of players or quarterbacks. But, you know, that Paul, and you know this, that belief permeates through that whole team. And I'm not sure Kirby, because you want to say, can Kirby coach his team to just believe that they can beat Alabama? Well, they've had the chokehold on them several different occasions and have just, you know, threw up on themselves. I'm not so sure, Paul, that Kirby believes deep down that they can beat them because a couple of games they've had, Paul, I mean, they absolutely just outplayed them. And in the end, ended up getting outcoached, which I believe is a mental deal. You start making some just off the wall. But
Jake, just, let me ask you this. How many, and I know there are a few, because you and I could come up with two without even blinking an eye, but how many schools other than Auburn and LSU go into a game with Alabama thinking they can win?
Oh, you're right, no doubt. But I think, but they don't go in there with the guns, with the same ammunition they're loading their guns with that Georgia is.
Look at the first half of the last three Alabama-Georgia games, Georgia had a career in those first halves.
No doubt. So, my point just being it's a belief because they can match – Georgia's rosters, you know, you can argue, but it realistically is, you know, probably the best top to bottom in the country, especially with what Kirby's done recruiting. So, you know, I just believe it's that belief. Can he not coach his team? Can he coach himself up to believe that they can beat them? Because they're there. They're there. And I don't know what's going on this season with quarterbacks. JT Daniels looked like a daggum seasoned veteran, the way he was slinging the ball around. I mean, there was no rust on his hood at all.
Well, remember something about that game. I don't want to take anything away from JT Daniels. I thought Mississippi State played a courageous game. Mississippi State was playing with numbers below the minimum for the protocol. I give them credit for playing. They could have cashed it in, but they didn't. So I don't think we – I want to see JT against a better defense, and we will. He still played well. We are up against a break. We are going to come back and have a pretty important conversation here about Tennessee football. How are we having this conversation again? I don't know, but it is the talk of Knoxville and many other places. And the legendary lead columnist for the Knoxville News Sentinel, John Adams, will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Welcome you back. And here we go again. We're back in Knoxville in November, talking about heat on the head football coach. Where have we ever seen this movie before? John Adams has probably written that column way too many times in his storied career at the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, always great to have you on. I can't believe we're talking about this again. Good afternoon.
Thanks, Paul. And I'm surprised you can't believe we're talking about this again. I mean, there is a track record.
No, you're right. I am. I thought maybe it wouldn't be so soon, but it is being discussed. And I don't know the lay of the land like you do. So what are people saying in your town?
Well, I don't know anybody that is making a passionate defense for Jeremy Pruitt, who has a losing record after three seasons here. It seems to be all about the money. That's the uncertainty. Tennessee's in the midst of a 2-5 season, has lost 5 consecutive games. And at that point, that normally would put a coach on more than a hot seat at Tennessee. However, Tennessee doesn't have a whole lot of money right now. And I just don't know if they can afford a buyout. It'd be $13 million. Granted, it's not as though you have to write him a check for $13 million. You pay him off on a monthly basis. Butch Jones knows all about that, former UT coach. He's still getting paid on a monthly basis. So perhaps the idea of having to pay 2 former coaches on a monthly basis would also be kind of daunting. But I really think money's the issue. I mean, it's hard to make a case for keeping Jeremy Pruitt otherwise. He's recruited pretty well. All coaches at UT recruit pretty well. But the results on the field just don't show up. And I don't think the rest of the season will get any better. Tennessee-Vanderbilt game, of course, was postponed this week. We're hopeful that game will be played because the teams would be right now combined 2-12, and I'm sure fans throughout the Southeast would be looking forward to that. But also Tennessee has to play Florida and Texas A&M, and I think if they could get a COVID pass on that, they'd probably take it. So you look at it, and you're probably headed for a 3-7 season in your third year on the job. So I just think fans have a real hard time saying, man, we need to keep this guy.
Well, let's talk about the man who hired him and who also gave him a contract extension, Philip Fulmer. I realize Coach Fulmer has been out of action with COVID, but has he said anything lately about Jeremy Pruitt?
No, he says things when good things are happening. He's kind of a hard guy to find when things aren't going well, but when you win the Gator Bowl, he'll be out there with a hand or two on the championship trophy. But in this case, no, you won't hear a lot from him. I think even if he were in good health, I don't think he'd be saying much. That's a part of the problem, too, when you think about it, Paul. And one of the reasons when you talk about UT's money issues, this goes way back to just poor mismanagement of finances, not so much this administration, but previous ones. There have been huge turnovers in that aspect of UT as well. But you look back through the years, and for example, right now, Philip Fulmer, he got a contract extension for 2 years. Why would you do that? Well, what if you had to fire him again? And then you'd have to pay off 2 more years on a contract. Certainly if Jeremy Pruitt doesn't make it, you don't want Philip Fulmer hiring the next coach. Then also Philip Fulmer gets a retention bonus each year, a retention bonus. We're not talking about Nick Saban here. He gets money just for not leaving. Well, where would he go? Who else would hire him? I don't think he'd take Gene Chizik's place as a SEC network analyst. Gene does a great job. So that's just money thrown away. And Tennessee's really good at that. And that is kind of underscores the problems with the football program right now. It's hard to cut Pruitt loose because of the money. And you go back to years of mismanagement financially. That's kind of why you're in this predicament.
John, you live there. I was there in Knoxville. I think it was in February, right before the pandemic, speaking to a group, and you know, usual muckety bucks. You know them all well, down on the river. And I was blown away by, remember, this is like late February, but I was blown away by the unanimity of this group, by the solidarity behind Jeremy Pruitt, and how I was told by all of them that the administration's behind them, the fans are behind them, the boosters are behind them, the people that matter are behind them. And that really wasn't all that long ago. It was 9 months ago. And I realize the season has gone awry, but is it really that bad?
Well, when you think about it, Paul, when things go bad, fans rely on their memories. And they go back to previous episodes of UT football that didn't go well. So going into the season, Tennessee's on a 6-game winning streak, wins its first two games this year. But prior to that, it was 2-5 in Pruitt's second season before it went on that winning streak against a lesser schedule. And I give him credit for winning those 6 consecutive games. It wasn't that easy. But before that, at the start of the season, it had lost to Georgia State, a 25-point underdog, and that defeat qualifies as one of the worst losses in Tennessee football history. Then it blew a game against BYU in the final minute the next week. So now, when things go bad again, I think fans look back and think, you know, this guy couldn't even beat Georgia State, a 10-year-old program. Couldn't beat Georgia State in its season opener in 2019. That should have told us something. So you look at how this season has gone, and you're right. I mean, it does seem like a drastic turnaround, but so has the season been. You go from a team that's on an 8-game winning streak to one that's on a 5-game losing streak with a good shot of 6 games lost in a row, since it plays schedule at least to play Florida on December 5th.
Talking to John Adams, and John, you know, you're right. The schedule is ominous with A&M and Florida. You know, maybe if he pulled an upset against one or two, it would change things. But if the season goes according to chalk, 3-7 with that December 19th win against Vanderbilt, which I'm sure will not garner a good rating wherever it is shown. What do you expect the offseason to be like for Jeremy Pruitt?
Well, I think what you're going to have is one of the most apathetic fan bases in UT history, because you would be bringing back a coach not because the university or the fans or the athletic department think, well, this guy's going to turn around. There are positive signs here that even though the season didn't go well, better things are coming. You can see it. No, you would just have a fan base that, well, we have to keep this guy because we don't have the money to get rid of him. And so other possibilities. I think what also contributes to this, perhaps would contribute to the apathy, is what if you thought you could hire Hugh Freeze? I mean, he's got some baggage, but these are desperate times. Baggage doesn't matter now. He's a proven winner, and I think he would take the UT job. So, but if you can't make that change and you go through an off season, there's just not going to be much enthusiasm for the season to come. It's going to be reflected in ticket sales as well. Now, Tennessee's schedule will lighten up considerably next year. It'll get 4 non-conference games, all at home, I think, that it can win. And so you could win 7 or 8 games with that schedule. But I just don't see where fans would look ahead and say, we're building toward a championship. Not at all.
Yeah, I think you're right about Hugh Freeze. I sat in his office once, John, at Ole Miss, and he was telling me a story. I believe he and his wife had just gotten married, and they drove past Neyland Stadium and looked into the stadium. And he said, can you imagine me ever getting the head coaching job here? It would be my dream job. And I said, is it still? And this was a couple of years ago, and he kind of looked at me with glassy eyes. Yeah, there's no question he would take the job. I'm not sure about South Carolina, but he would take the UT job.
Yeah, I think you. I think South Carolina's a completely different deal. If I were in his position, I wouldn't make that move. I would hold out for something better, and I think Tennessee would be better. Maybe, but see, then you get to a situation. Think about this, Paul. Say you go 3-7, and then come back next year against a much easier schedule, win the games you're supposed to win. You're 7-5 or 8-4. You go maybe go back to the Gator Bowl and beat a mediocre Big Ten team. If that's your ceiling, if that's what you aspire to get, maybe that would be okay. But I don't know if Tennessee would make a change after going with an 8-win season. So then you go back to – then you'd look at the 2022 season. And I just don't – I don't see drastic improvement.
What is there about Jeremy Pruitt, if you had to diagram or dissect his coaching ability from A to Z? I mean, what's he good at? Because, I mean, certainly not communication.
No, that's in fact, I get a lot of emails on that very point. They wonder about his ability to communicate with players because fans listen to how he communicates with media, how he communicates with fans, and then they apply that to wonder how he communicates with players. And sometimes that's a reliable assessment. So not communication. One of the things I don't understand about Jeremy Pruitt, I think he really knows defense. He was a defense coordinator at Florida State when it won a national championship, defense coordinator at Alabama when it won a national championship, defensive coordinator at Georgia when it was pretty good under Mark Richt. So he proved he seemed to have a really good reputation for defense, but I'm not seeing that with this team. You're 7 games into the season, and there's not a game that goes by that invariably a game-turning play occurs due to a blown coverage, a breakdown in the Tennessee secondary, and somebody from Arkansas or Auburn or Alabama or wherever is racing into the end zone with a couple of Tennessee DBs well behind him. So, I mean, Tennessee's given up more than 30 points a game. I wonder maybe why hadn't he taken over the defense? Sometimes you see that with head coaches when it's their area of expertise and things aren't going well, but that hasn't happened either. So I don't think he's particularly adept at game management. I don't think anybody would say that he is. His team's still playing hard, so that's a positive factor. But he's recruiting pretty well. One thing about recruiting, though, Paul, at Tennessee, you can go back, and it doesn't matter what the situation is. Team was winning big. Team wasn't winning. Good, bad, mediocre, great. Tennessee, doesn't matter who the coach is or whether it's a transitional season, Tennessee always signs a top 25 class, usually better than that. I mean, it signed a top 7 class when it went from Lane Kiffin, who was only there a year, and hired Derek Dooley late in the recruiting cycle. So to say Pruitt's recruiting well, yeah, he is. Everybody recruits well at Tennessee. I mean, not Alabama or Ohio State well, but it does recruit well. So it's hard to – I mean, what would you say? I mean, you follow this. What would you say is a great attribute for Jeremy Pruitt? What does he do well? What have you seen about him?
Well, John, I've always been told that he was a good evaluator of talent. But, you know, it's one thing to recruit well. It's another thing to evaluate well. But developing and getting the job done are completely different. So, I mean, most of what I've heard about him and been told about him by people that admire him, that like him, has not come true as a head coach.
Yeah, see, I wonder about the same thing. I'd heard about what a really good evaluator of talent he is. You also have to wonder, Paul, though, when you look at his record as defensive coordinator, look at where he was. He never had a shortage of talent, really. It wasn't as though he had to strategize and X and O somebody to death and cover up all these shortcomings on a defense. He usually had really good talent, and he hasn't had that level of talent at Tennessee.
John, it's always great to have you on, somebody who spits the truth out as they see it, and we will talk again very soon. All the best. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. John Adams, who he's been the sports editor and the lead columnist in Knoxville for going on 34 years, I believe, maybe a little bit less, more than 30 years. That's an incredibly long time to see the comings and goings of Tennessee football, and that was a blistering assault on not only Jeremy Pruitt, but on the people that run that place. So we will take a break. More to come and get your reaction.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome you back. Let's get back to the calls. And what a conversation there with John Adams. How about Mario in Albany, New York? Hello, Mario.
It's Marco, Paul.
Marco.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. Great to speak with you. Great show tonight. I'm a Tennessee alum, and I wanted to thank you for having John Adams on, who tells it like it is, like you do. He tells the truth, even though it may pain him to say it at times. But my gosh, what a great guy and a great writer. I just wanted to thank you for having him on. I always enjoy it. And I love it because you let the guests speak and you let the information come from their mouths. You're the best interviewer I've ever seen. God bless you. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you, Paul. Bye.
Marco, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you. John, thank you very much. John is up next. In Tennessee. Hello, John.
Hello, Paul. It's first time caller. It's a privilege to talk to you, and thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'll make this as quick as I can. I'm one of those apathetic Tennessee fans. I've been a Tennessee fan for about 60 years now, and I really appreciated the interview you had with John Adams. It was really good. But everybody knows Tennessee football has really not been at championship level for probably the last 15 years. And, you know, it seems like we keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. Hiring bad coaches, getting into bad contracts. And I guess my question for you would be, what do you think the real problem is here? I mean, this has been going on, like I said, for 15-plus years. Is it the UT administration? Is it the athletic director? Or is it the boosters? What do you think is really going on?
Yeah, it's interesting. I asked Philip Fulmer this question once before he became the athletic director. And he pointed toward leadership at the top. And what I mean by that is if you go back over the last 20 years, Tennessee has been a revolving door with chancellors, presidents, and athletic directors. And in fairness to Philip Fulmer, people are saying, well, I can't believe, including myself, I can't believe we're here again. There's a reason why Tennessee hired Jeremy Pruitt. There's a reason why Philip Fulmer is the athletic director. And the reason is the last crew was so inept and simply out of their league that they created such a disastrous situation that the school had not only to fire the athletic director, but fire the chancellor. So, you know, Fulmer got the job when John Curry, his predecessor, was fired in the middle of the most inane, dysfunctional Keystone Cops coaching search in the history of all coaching searches. They were down to their seventh or eighth choice, and the chancellor fired the AD when he was about to hire Mike Leach. And that was after they had decided their first choice was Greg Schiano, and then the blogosphere went crazy. So Fulmer, in fairness, you know, gets the job within a week. He is now asked to hire the eighth choice, which turned out to be Jeremy Pruitt.
Wow. Well, the one other comment I would say and get your thoughts on this, there's a lot of rumors that go around about Tennessee football. I've followed them over the years. But do you think that there's a problem, too, with like one or two booster families? I won't mention their names, but
I went to school there. I know who you're talking about. You know, I'm not going to blame a family for, you know, being responsible for this carnage. You know, are they influential? Yes, but they've also given hundreds of millions of dollars to the university. You know, at some point, this has to stop. And I for one thought maybe this was going to stop with the combination of Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer, which is one reason why he will not be fired at the end of this season, in my estimation, because you just have to ride it out at some point. This isn't Will Muschamp coming back for this season. Nobody thought this was going to be a good season, but they stuck with him and it turned out to be a mistake. But, you know, unless you are absolutely certain who your next coach is, you are going to retain Jeremy Pruitt.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll hang up, but I'll say one other comment. I'm just at the point of falling, like I said, over 60 years, and I'll watch them on TV from time to time, but I'm not supporting the program anymore until I see some results. But thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you. I don't mean to be a blanket supporter of Phil Fulmer, but you can quibble about the extension to Jeremy Pruitt. I don't understand that, but I'm sure it was all about recruiting, which everything is about in college football. But, you know, he didn't have a lot of choice when he made that decision a couple of years ago. We're heading to a break. Appreciate your patience this afternoon. Jackie Sherrill a little bit later on, and more of your phone calls when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Robin is up next in Indiana. Hey, Robin, welcome to the show.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. A question about the strength of Jeremy Pruitt. I'm curious as to who's driving the offensive philosophy. Is he giving Chaney free rein, or are they just working around the strengths and weaknesses of Garantano. You know, you've talked a lot about Sam Pittman, and, you know, one of the great things he did was bring in an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator. Is Jeremy capable of being that CEO and making the decisions and letting the staff run with it?
That's a great question, and it's always, I think, the biggest challenge for a new head coach who's never been there before to understand that you either give up too much or you don't give up enough. And I would agree. I think the Garantano experiment is over, and I understand it a little bit, but it just seems like, you know, they're trying to do something there that they're not capable of doing. I mean, Tennessee, you know, was supposed to have this great offensive line, great running backs. It seemed like if they had stuck with that a little bit more at times, they wouldn't have the turnovers and wouldn't have the ineptness in the passing game that they've had.
Yeah, they clearly don't have the balance that they have. And I don't know if he's trying to mold the team into the Alabama of 10 years ago, you know, strong defense and run the ball, or are they actually trying to score points?
Right now, I don't know. It's a good question, and it's a conundrum, but I appreciate very much your call. How about Gary, who is up next? Hey, Gary.
Hey, how you doing, Paul? And happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. Thank you.
I've got a couple of comments I'd like to make. I live in North Alabama. A lot of Tennessee fans around here. Not all of them agree with you on Phil Fulmer. They don't hold him in high esteem as you do. They feel like that Phil was hard to make a choice for a coach. And when you're put in that position, you make the choice. Not that he didn't have pressure on him, but that's his job. And Pruitt, I don't think, has been given enough time to make that decision, to make all the changes in his staff and recruit the players he needs to recruit. I think he will become a good head coach. And my other comment was about Kyle Trask and Mac Jones, either one of them, if they're lucky enough to win the Heisman, what a story would that be? A year or two ago, nobody even really ever give them a chance to play. And both of them is exceeded, I think, beyond expectations.
Well, thank you for the call. You be well and have a great Thanksgiving. Mike is up next in Indiana. Hey, Mike, welcome.
Hi, Paul.
Hi there.
Hey, first, I'd like to thank you as a lifelong Big Ten fan for your coverage and expertise of the SEC. I've always enjoyed your show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So I've always loved Ed Orgeron, but I have to ask you, is LSU akin to Baylor? The internet has accused LSU of a culture of sexual misconduct and a cover-up and says it has to go. What do you know about that?
Yeah, Mike, I don't know any more than that's out in the public domain. It's a pretty creepy story, and I hope and trust that they'll get to the bottom of it, and if anyone did cover it up, and I mean anyone, they should be fired. Allowing this to go on in any environment, whether it's a college campus or in the workplace, is simply, not only is it unacceptable, it's also criminal. So we'll hopefully get to the end of this very soon. We're out of time for this hour. A lot more to do in this program, and we hope you'll stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.